Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women, and we like beer a shade too much.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
We're the Drunk Guys, and this week we are reading our Patreon-selected book of the month, Pale Fire by Vladimir Nabokov, and Nate is starting with a beer.
So my beer, the name doesn't really have anything to do with the book. It is more because this is a weird experimental beer, much like this is a weird experimental book. Okay, so this is Lagunitas Tiki Fusion Zombie Cocktail Inspired IPA, 10% alcohol. It's an IPA with lime, orange, lime, grapefruit, and allspice. That's what it says. And like last time, I'm just going to get a very large can of something strange and see if it's okay.
I go to the glory hole to get into a large, strange can usually.
Oh, that's weird. That is so really strange.
This is the reason we are not a video podcast. We will never get endorsements this way.
Definitely not. Ooh, That's weird. It's definitely tastes like orange. That's mostly what I'm getting. Orange and allspice and something spicy. Spice-ish. I guess it's allspice. Man, that's weird though. It's almost like coriander, but not in a like Belgian beer kind of way. Because it's also like basically orange juice. Yep, weird. Very weird.
Well, the weirdness will continue with this book. Our theme this month, Jimmy, correct me if I'm wrong, was experimental books.
Weird shit.
Weird shit, okay. And Pale Fire was first published in 1962. This is our second Nabokov book, or I've seen pretentious people say Nabokov, and I don't know which is correct. I just know the police say Nabokov. And it's famous, my guess.
He's famous for being the other one he wrote that people have heard of but probably haven't read.
So Nabokov is one of those authors that if you're a book nerd, you read a lot of him. Like he's has a very high reputation and probably well deserved, I would say.
Yeah.
But to the average person, he's your average reader. He is known for Lolita. He's almost a one-hit wonder. But it's the same way that like people are like, oh, George Benson, he did that on Broadway song. Like, he did a lot more, dude. And then, like, but then it's like a lot of work to understand the rest of it. And you're like, I don't fucking like bebop. So the book, I don't know how we discuss this. The book is presented as an annotated scholarly critical edition of a poem by a recently deceased poet. So the poet, whose name is John Shade, has written his last poem called Pale Fire. And then he dies. And then this has a foreword, it was edited, and has many footnotes and an index provided by a second character named, maybe, Charles Kinboat. And all of it's fake.
It's all of that up. Is fictional.
So if you're like me, when you see a book with a foreword and you're like, I don't feel like reading that, that is not what you do with this book. Or you're like, who the fuck reads the index? You need to read the index with this book. It's like that thing your teacher gives you in middle school where it's like, make sure you read all the directions before you do anything. And then like the last step is like, don't do any of these things, but you've already fucked it up because you weren't paying attention. You know, it's like, write step one, write your name. Step two, clap and announce, I am a walrus. Step three, draw a star in the top right corner. And then you get to like step 30. And I was like, don't do anything except step one. Like, fuck. Can I have an eraser? It's like that. He really wants to test if you know how to read a book properly. So this is my second time reading it. And the first time, I did not read it properly. I got almost nothing out of it. And I was like, I'm probably too dumb to understand this, which is true. But this time I got a little bit more. Plus I cheated.
Nate, so I cheated. Yeah. I cheated hard, man. I probably was like a quarter of the way in, and I was like, first I did read the Wikipedia page, like, oh, this is all fictional. I had read like started to read the foreword, and I'm like, what? Oh, and I was like, this is all fictional. Then I was about a quarter of the way in, and I'm like, what the fuck is? Oh my god. Okay, I'm just gonna look it up. And there's a really great, I just want to like cite my sources here, a really great YouTube video called, which is almost an hour, called...
It's like a deep dive?
Solving Nabokov's Pale Fire, a deep dive. Brilliant.
Oh yeah,
video.
That helped a
like,
lot.
Oh, my God, that like explains everything. That's so much better. Anyway, any insight about the book from me comes from there. So just, you know, I cannot claim any credit for understanding a single fucking thing.
That I think I also watched that video when I was about two-thirds through, and I was like, oh, fuck. I should mulligan those first two-thirds because I didn't get them either.
I didn't watch any videos. I read a few articles after I finished it. There are definitely like bits and pieces I didn't really get, but I understood it. I just didn't love it.
Well, let's start with that. What did you understand then?
I mean, I understood the joke. Or I don't know if it's the joke or like the point. Like, I get it. Like, I didn't think it was an actual. Also, it helps knowing Lolita and that Nabokov does unreliable narrators. So that's a big hint. And it was like, oh, he's just doing another crazy person.
Well, I don't know. Like, I've read other things of his, and that's not what he does in every book.
Well, that's what he did 100% of the time in the books I've read of his.
No, it's like that's a kind of a leap to be like, he probably did that this time too. You just got very lucky that was true.
Oh, yeah. No, it was definitely lucky. I mean, I figured like once he started like, once we get into it, but like once he started talking about, once it was clear that all the notes started to mean absolutely nothing about the poem, you're like, oh, this guy's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't guess the ending, which may or may not have been really happening in this world at all, but like I got like, yo, okay, this guy's nuts.
So I think this is one of those books that has... it's kind of how much work do you want to put into it?
I didn't want to put that much work into it. I confess.
And there is no bottom to that. Like you could just dig deeper and deeper and deeper forever and would never get to the bottom of that.
You know, like when you play like an RPG and there's like a decent ending, but if you do more side quests, you can get a better ending.
Mm.
But some of them require like a lot of grinding and fetch quests and bullshit.
Yeah,
this is like that. You can get an ending. And you're like, oh, cool.
It does
stop Sephiroth. End,
I guess.
But you could get a better, you can get more. And I think I got like a yellow belt ending.
I don't know where that is in the ranking of belts.
It's pretty shitty. It's okay. A piss belt. It's not good. Better than totally knowing nothing, but I would never claim to be an expert in this. I spoke to someone a couple years ago. This is a book that I think it was Stuyvesant. It must have been like their AP English class. This was one of the books they read.
Oh, fuck them.
Jesus. Fuck them in the neck. That's ridiculous.
For those that don't know, Stuyvesant is the local New York City head nerd school.
It is very
famous
in the United States, but yes. Super high achieving, highest academic achieving, and competitive kids in New York City go there. And a few other schools that we won't name that me and Jimmy went to one of them. But you know, it doesn't matter. the AP, AP English is also fucking horseshit because fuck College Board.
Fuck but, College Board.
Right in their urethra. But they, with another dick. You got a space dock them hard.
I've seen that.
I've you sound like a Vietnam veteran. I've seen things.
Seen it.
Anyway, I remember talking to a friend's kid who was like, "I read this book," and I was like, "Oh, I read that," and I was like, "I thought that'd be the conversation." And then she was like, "Did you understand all this?" I was like, "No, I didn't get fucking anything. I didn't have a teacher help me for 6 weeks on it. Fuck you, nerd." And then
I think even if I was in high school I had someone helping me through it, it would have been much more productive of an experience.
I definitely would have hated it.
I
would have hated it, though. Absolutely hated it.
I would have been really mad the whole time at Nabokov. Like, what a fucking asshole. Just say the story. Like, what the fuck is this shit?
Okay, we should explain just a little bit more.
Yeah,
so there's like a foreword.
Good luck.
And then there's a poem, which is 999 lines. And then, which I really just kind of read through once and skimmed over. It really is unnecessary to read for like the book, except it's a perfectly fine poem that is an entirely different work, although really from the rest of the book. It is merely there almost by accident. It's really not at all. And so then you start reading, well, I didn't know what order to read it, so I read Canto 1 in the poem, and then I went and started reading the footnotes about Canto 1, and then I'm like, hey, wait a minute.
this doesn't matter at all.
I don't think this poem is about any of this shit. That is the one thing I came up with on my own. I'm like, and then when I watched the video, I was like, oh yeah, okay, I was right about that. The poem's not about Zembla and...
Doesn't resemble it at all.
Exactly. And like this stuff and the things that Kinboat, the guy who wrote the footnotes in this fictional world, the things he chooses to like comment on are like a fucking random word, like a random, not even important word.
I gotta say, they're kind of like the way we introduce beers sometimes. It's like, here's an example. Here's this one where he finds every excuse to make it all about him. But one of the lines was, I never bounced a ball or swung a bat.
Oh, yeah. I wrote that one down, too.
And then the footnote to that line of poetry, because the poem is the autobiography of John Shade. And I didn't really understand much of Canto 1 at all, because it's like super like heady shit about life and understanding death and stuff. And Canto 2 is about his daughter who commits suicide because she's ugly. I think that's really what happens. But there's this line somewhere in one of those, I forget where the cantos end off, I never bounced a ball or swung a bat. And then Kinboat writes, frankly, I too never excelled in soccer and cricket. I'm a passable horseman, a vigorous though unorthodox skier, a good skater, a tricky wrestler, and an enthusiastic rock climber. It's like the thing when you're listening, having a conversation, but you're really just waiting for your turn to talk. You're like, funny you mentioned that, because the other day I did something different. That's his method of introducing things. And some of the other ones are more egregious. I can't find one right now. But
I really like this one. Line 316. The toothwort white haunted our woods in May. And the note is, frankly, I am not certain what this means. It's like, when he does that, he does it a bunch of times. It's like, that's actually pretty funny. There's one is like, if you just had a library... Anyone with a library could look this shit up. I'm not going to waste my time. It's beneath me.
There's so many like that. I'm trying to see if I can find one more.
Frost is the author of one of the greatest short poems in the English language, a poem that every American boy knows by heart. I dare not quote it from memory, lest I displace one small precious word.
So look it up.
Also, you said everybody knows it.
So he does a lot of that kind of nonsense.
So, okay, as you're reading the footnotes, you also get the he's just using random things to tell other stories about not just about himself but also about this country that he came from called Zembla,
it only sounds like a pharmaceutical product.
This is a fictional country,
or is it?
Except that is actually, according to the video, that is actually a real place. It's Zembla. This giant island north of Russia.
That video didn't go into all the clues because like there's so many references to just like Lapland and Denmark and Copenhagen and all these like Nordic North Sea places that island is in. Like, I think it's not there are a lot of clues to get you there that if you are a better or more careful reader than us, you could get that on your own.
But he starts to tell the story about a deposed king who's like on the run and he's been taken over by the Soviets. Or essentially, it's, you know.
He does use the word Soviet a couple of times.
Yeah, it's like Russian, the Soviets. I mean, it's a communist revolution where the king has been deposed and he had to flee the country in disguise. That's like the first story, is the king fleeing the country in disguise, I think. And it's about King Charles Xavier, or Professor X.
Yeah.
And you get the story about the king, and then gradually, that's the first story, and then another random footnote will be his childhood and this other stuff.
Or a description of a fucking chiffa robe in his manner. Like, some of it is not... Like, there's enough, like, red herring passages where you kind of, like, what? Where is it? What does it mean? Like, I feel like some of them are like decoy passages.
Yeah, and he fills it with details that do not matter at all in terms of the puzzle. So, at least I think, or if they matter, man's a fucking genius. But which he was,
I think he is a genius.
However, I still think he filled it with stuff that doesn't matter, just to make the stuff that does matter
There's you've read the quote, probably it's on the Wikipedia page for the book, where it says it's actually like a really dumb line for a guy who's a great writer. He says, like, Pale Fire, quote, is full of plums that I keep hoping somebody will find.
Like, it's plum full of them.
Yeah. And they must plumb the depths of this book. That's the wrong kind of plum, Nabokov. I'm from Russia. How am I supposed to know? So he purposely put tons of just like super obscure references. And I'm sure even those passages are like, this doesn't really mean much. I'm sure there's something in there too.
Yeah. So you have to find out about Zembla, and then you also find out about Gradus, or Gradus, whatever his name is, who was the man who came and shot John Shade, the poet who supposedly wrote the poem. But yet Kinboat, although this is weird on many levels, not necessarily true on many levels, he says that the guy who shot who shot Shade did it because he thought Shade was actually the exiled king in disguise. But yet, you're hearing all these stories about the king, and yet the Kinboat, who is the guy writing the footnotes, he's also throwing in these hints that he's actually the king.
I mean, this assassination attempt by the government, is this some Black Ops kind of shit, isn't it? Oh, it is. Couldn't you say? No?
Yes.
Sure.
Oh, come on.
If it's real.
I went to 2 beer stores today. This was fucking impossible, this task. And I had read the book. This is Black Ops from Brooklyn Brewery, which has been on the podcast before. I don't know if we drank it. I know Alex drank it when he was our guest for the...
Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers, yeah. But I've had it before. We've all had it. It's great. It's a barrel-aged stout. It's 12% alcohol. I went to the beer stores near me. Have gotten really shitty lately. Like, I was looking at it, I was like, oh, a fridge full of other half beers. And then I was like, bought canned in November. Holy ew. Like, gross. So I was like, oh, I'm really desperate. And I was like, oh, that barrel-aged imperial stout will have held up.
Yes.
If they can that in November. So I'll chance it.
Is that in cans now?
Yeah.
It used to be in like those giant bottles.
It used to be in the big Magnum, and it was like $20 for the bottle.
Yeah.
Silly. Little do we know how stupid expensive beer would get. Mm. I accidentally texted only Jimmy, I think. I meant to text the group, but I bought the Utopias, Nate. It was more money than the guy had said. And I was like, fuck it. What are we doing with this podcast money? Speaking of, yeah. We get some, and I throw it away.
We threw it into the sun.
No,
for
a
beer.
We're gonna get like 10 books out of that beer.
So every month we have the vote on the book, and they voted for this. And when they vote, we say thanks to the people that gave the money, and they voted, and they say such kind things, so many kind things, and so Mike is going to thank all of our lovely patrons.
There are other things you get too. You get to vote in the poll, you get to join us for, you get exclusive content, you get early access to episodes. We do the lives. I don't know if people, you should let us know if you still want us to do those. I feel like, because when I showed my genitals on the last one, apparently that was a turnoff. But like, I'm ready to keep doing it.
Tubing it up.
You know, you're not paying to see that because that's illegal. But
also, it makes the face filters that you use make the wiener look very strange.
Yeah, like, wow, that nose just shrunk. So okay. So we should thank those people. And each one of them, there will be a footnote where I thank somebody else, because that's how this book worked. In no particular order, I'll thank Catherine, the Dogfish Head propaganda bungler. I guess I'm really fucking excited that we have a patron who works for Dogfish Head.
Do we?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He was like, and I was like, are you ever going to be in New York? He's like,
that's
probably
going to
be there next month. I was like, holy shit. One of us will suck your dick. And he said, yeah, they give us a case. I was messaging with him. He said, they give us a case of beer, and I never drink all. I was like, what the fuck, man?
Because it would kill him.
Jeff Avery, the Black Rabbit of Inle. Okay. Oh, this is an interesting name. I, Mike, recently starred in an adult film involving me and a hoagie. Jesus. I'm happy to say that I really parted the roast beef curtains with extra mayo, but unfortunately, the only footlong belonged to the sandwich. That's true. That is... Did my wife write this? it's 1 foot around. Okay, so... Carol, Colton, the rubber box. Derek, emotional support burrito. Fuck up my boobs, Mike. Okay, I'm talking to myself now. Been these insulting
it's
ways.
It's a pep talk.
it's fuck up my boobs, Mike. You could do it. Grace, Hayden, Joe P, Josh. I feel like that's a new one. Oh, this podcast. Oh, God, these names are getting out of control. This podcast is just a hobby. I make my... That's true, actually. I make my real money through speaking engagements with Middle Eastern terrorists. Apparently, having to listen to me talk for a few minutes is a far more compelling reason to blow yourself up than 72 virgins. It's true. It is. And they start the conversation, they're like, listen, my friend. But at the end, they never call me their friend anymore. They get very offended. They really don't like me. Oh, look, another person whose name is a sentence. People think I'm a misogynist when they hear me rant about how wrong it is the Girl Scouts can sell Thin Mints, even though they didn't make me thin. Also, because I hate women. I think the thing in that sentence I hate the most is Thin Mints. They're fucking disgusting. I really
and a lie.
They are a lie. I hate them.
Yeah, mint cookies are disgusting.
I've never eaten a piece of chocolate and thought, you know what would make this better? Toothpaste. Like, I don't understand why.
It feels like I'm getting clean.
they're an abomination. But thank you. Thank you, me, who said that sentence.
It's very meta.
But also, other people with names. Linda, that's a real name. Holy shit. Meep? Oh, no, not anymore. Mr. Slotch, my spank material was Requiem for a Dream as a young man. It's true. Ass to ass. Putang Clan, Stephen, Thick Richard III, Ween, William, and Zaphod Beeplebrox. Thank you all for contributing and supporting our podcast and helping me pay for my Ozempic prescription because you've made me feel really bad about my body image. if you want us to join that austere group of scholars and patrons of the Sharts, head over to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub. Or you could help us out by leaving us a review or just telling someone to check it out. Back to this book. That was all a long footnote, actually. That was,
was a that giant was based on line 47's word, chair.
I have no idea where we were.
So, you get all this stuff about the history of Zembla, or more like the king of Zembla. But at the same time, Kinboat is also hinting very strongly that he's actually the king.
I watched the video too. I didn't see that in the text as much.
Okay, well, I definitely highlighted a bunch of those things.
As I was trying to notice you can't notice everything in this book. So that was when I was like, that seems like a stretch to me, because I don't care.
Oh, I think in my... Well, so once I saw the video and knew to look for it, then I found a bunch of things. He says, there's a passage where he's in third person describing something that happened to the king and then said the word I in the middle of it. But I don't blah, blah, blah.
Just word search I.
Yeah, good idea. Oh, yeah. Okay, so here it is.
Holy shit.
Told you.
No, I did not do that. Okay, so this is line 691, the attack. And then it's John Shea's heart attack. But actually, it talks about the king being parachuting into America. So this is, he's already escaped the country. He's like gone to France and now he's trying to get to America. And he literally parachutes out and he gets picked up by somebody in a Rolls Royce. And then it says, and then it says, well, Kingsley, the British chauffeur, an old and absolutely faithful retainer, was doing his best to cram the bulky and ill-folded parachute into the boot. I relaxed on a shooting stick he had supplied me with, sipping a delightful scotch and water from the car bar. Man, those were the days. And glancing amid the ovation of crickets, that vortex of yellow and maroon butterflies that so pleased they Chateaubriand on his arrival in America. On the article, he goes on and says, I have been looking forward to meeting my favorite American poet. I felt sure. So he switches mid-paragraph to, oh, he's describing the escape of the king and switches to I. And that wasn't the only thing.
I started highlighting a lot of things, and then I quickly realized I was highlighting almost everything. So it was unhelpful. And I stopped after a while. So I understand if you didn't.
I blessed my royal star. This is Kinboat talking about himself. But it says, I blessed my royal stars for having taught myself wife work, for I now sewed up all four pockets. This is where he was hiding at the very end. He's hiding the note cards that the poem was written on because he thinks somebody's going to steal it. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. That's a big thing that in the introduction that the poet wrote his poem on index cards and then would like go through and edit those, and that would create the fair copy. So there's a lot of footnotes where like, this is what he wrote on the scribbled on the draft. Apparently that's kind of similar to how Nabokov himself worked. Because I remember a few years ago, there was a kind of controversial thing that his unfinished final novel, they had figured out they were going to publish it, and he had written it on a bunch of fucking index cards. Like, big index cards. Like,
that got to be a lot of index cards.
I think he got the big boy ones. Like, there are some enormous index cards. Like
Oak Tag.
The 4x6 ones?
I think there are 5x7s. There's some big boys. And he wrote, and then everyone was like, but dude, he didn't finish it. He specifically said, throw that in the garbage. It's not done. Like, no, Kafka. And then they
no, we need money.
Yeah. I mean, when this book came out is when he made enough money to not have to do anything but write anymore. So he should have of all people understood that.
So another thing is that he's both like talking about the king and but also hinting that he is himself the king. But at the same time, he doesn't specifically say the king was gay, except he makes it very clear that the king was gay. But that also
he's fucking gay.
That he's gay, which when I look at my highlights, those are most of the things I highlighted.
Well, Nate, you have a type, but there were a few things I highlighted too. Like the one part where he's like, I think Shade was gonna tell me something that he discovered about himself from his youth. And it's like, oh, he didn't tell me that. All right, never mind.
There's a paragraph. So there's a paragraph near the beginning. There's a footnote near the beginning where essentially he describes the king as a young man and the boy that he was sleeping with.
There's a thing here about Queen Blenda or some shit. And talking said, a psychiatrist said something he had subconsciously killed his mother and would continue to kill her in him if he did not renounce sodomy. Pretty direct.
Yes. There are many, many. Another one is the part, I don't know, it's pretty, about two-thirds of the way through, when the king has gotten married, but he, like, can't consummate the wedding, consummate the marriage, and then he farced himself with aphrodisiacs, but the interior characteristics of her unfortunate sex kept fatally putting him off. One night, he tried tiger tea, and hopes rose high. He made the mistake of begging her to comply with an expedient which she made the mistake of denouncing as unnatural and disgusting. Finally, he told her that an old riding accident was incapacitating him, but that a cruise with his pals and a lot of sea bathing would be sure to restore his strength. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Oh, no, yeah, the gay stuff is...
There's a lot of it.
It's a lot of it.
A lot of it. And for 19... And when he's writing this, it's like, you know, 1959, 1960. This was absolutely not allowed in America.
Well, yeah, but...
Or most places.
It's also, like, not obvious. It's not like the book was called The Gay Russian King. And you're like, wow, dude, come on. What are you doing? The fucking Birchers be all over that. But like, this was...
You have to read it.
You have to really work
carefully
to get that. And if you're willing
Which
to...
No one's going
to
do.
If you were willing to work for it, you probably were like, yeah, whatever, man. You'd probably be more pleased that you found it than to like out the gay, right? The gay character in the book. So he may be the king.
There was another good one.
Oh, please.
Sorry.
No, yeah, go for it.
Okay, so this is very close to the end. He talks about how he had one, he was renting this place, and then there was one houseboy that was living with him that he got rid of, and then he got a new one. And then it says he had worked for 2 years as a male nurse. He was hard up. Well, you see, there's a hint right there. He wanted to study landscaping. I promised him some financial assistance. He started to work at my place the very next day. He was awfully nice and pathetic and all that, but a little too talkative and completely impotent, which I found discouraging.
I think part of what I noticed reading this, a lot of the, not the tone, not the content, but like the style is reminded me of Lolita. Of just this
a lot of words,
flowery, and sometimes I, as a reader, I'm in the mood for that, and it's like intoxicating. You're like, oh my god, this is like. I don't
Otherwise,
know what he's
he was
doing.
A strong, strapping fellow, and I hugely enjoyed the aesthetic pleasure of watching him buoyantly struggle with the earth and turf, and delicately manipulate bulbs. Anyway,
yeah, it's subtle.
Yeah,
it's very really subtle. Hard to figure out.
It's turf.
Sorry, I interrupted much, you. But
no, that's fine.
I thought you'd appreciate that one.
I've had it coming for 6 years now.
eight, my friend.
No, the first 2 years, I think I didn't interrupt you much.
No, you're wrong.
So this is a great example of what Nate, you had said earlier, which was that there is no bottom, not just because of the gay stuff, but like there's no bottom to... You could just spend the whole book just looking for clues about that, right? Is Kinboat / King, what the fuck, Charles the Righteous or something like that?
King Professor X.
The Beloved.
The Beloved, right? Is he gay? There's tons of clues, and there's that. So that's one thing. That's like one paper right there. Done. Boom. But there's so many other things about... Kinboat's relationship, and it reminded me of Lolita again, of the unreliable narrator. Of he says stuff, and it's kind of distractingly written. And then it's only if you read it again, or you're very carefully read, that's not what is happening. So there's a bunch of scenes where you realize he fucking doesn't even know this poet. He doesn't know the guy. They're acquaintances at best.
He moves in. He's renting a house from a guy who lives next door to him, who lives next door to John Shade. So he like spies on him through the window all the time and walks by his house and was like, knocks on the door, is like, did you guys call my name? And he's like, no, what? Like there's my favorite parts, I think, were all the clear references to how much John Shade's wife hates this guy.
Oh, those are, I highlighted a lot of those.
And he like keeps showing up the house and she's like, we've got to go somewhere else right now. Sorry. My favorite one, though, is when he shows up while he shows up at their house, and Sybil, Shade's wife, is saying, John cannot see you. He is in the bath. And John's raucous roar coming from the bathroom, let him in, Sybil. He won't rape me. Like, what?
Why would you even think of that if it wasn't a possibility? If it wasn't like, you know.
Well, I didn't think.
In
yeah,
the
I
realm.
Mean, now I might.
Another one was near the sort of a third of the way through when John Shade is clearly he's been writing the poem, and Kinboat is, you know, he wants to see like the draft, or he wants to see what's been written so far. And Sybil says, oh no, he never shows his work until it's finished. Where it's like, is that true? Or is that an excuse to, like, fucking go away, man? Like, that's just a convenient thing. Like, please, I just don't want to get into that right now.
Because he later on, like, sees them or hears them, and he is clearly reading the poem to his wife before it's done for, like, how's she thinking? He's like, how could he do such a thing? Or some shit. Or he's looking at them through the window from the bushes, and he's making that up in his head.
Here's a quote about that, about how he knows anything about their house. He said, "Today, it would be impossible for me to describe Shade's house in terms of architecture, or indeed in any terms other than those of peeps and glimpses and window-framed opportunities." Which, like, you know, if you're not a careful reader, which I have not always been, you might, all right, well, I don't know what he's talking about. But no, he only knows his house from fucking, like, when they opened the door and he saw something from the doorway, or he was looking through a window. And then there's the passage about the wife. This is great. This is the footnote for the word civil. He writes,
"I saw that, yeah.
John Shade's wife, nay Irondel, she was a few months his senior. I understand she's of Canadian stock, as did she came of Canadian stock, as did Shade's maternal grandmother, a first cousin of Sybil's grandfather, if I'm not greatly mistaken. From the very first, I tried to behave with the utmost courtesy towards my friend's wife, and from the very first, she disliked and distrusted me. I was to learn later that when alluding to me in public, she used to call me, quote, an elephantine tick, a king-sized botfly, a macaco worm, the monstrous parasite of a genius," end quote. I pardon her and everybody. Like, he like has no self-awareness. Like, this lady thought I was a fucking huge pain in the ass. That's what that's, you know, we all make mistakes.
Also, there's in that line the hint about Kinboat and Botkin, but we'll get to that later.
Yes.
Okay. Another line. This is near the, this is only a couple pages from the end where John Shade has finished the poem, and Kinboat is like, "Oh my God, he finished it. I wanna see it." And he sees Sybil driving away from the house, and John says, "I grant," so he's going to go over and be like, "Show me the poem." And he says, "I grant you, I very much resembled a lean, wary lover taking advantage of a young husband's being alone in the house."
Well, he wanted to.
Also, another hilarious quote. "And if you agree to show me your finished product, there will be another treat. I promise to divulge to you why I gave you, or rather, who gave you your theme." "What theme?" said Shade absently. This is where Kinboat thinks the whole poem's been about him, in his all of his stories about Zembla and the king, who he says, who he's hinting is him, and the escape and all this stuff. And then John Shade says, "What theme?"
So there's another line about, and there are many examples of Kinboat inserting himself into the poem because he can't insert himself into the poet. And he says something here. "We may conclude that the final text of Pale Fire has been deliberately and drastically drained of every trace of the material I contributed." It's not his poem.
Yeah.
It's like, they cut me out. They cut out my...
There's nothing about my stuff in there, so maybe it wasn't about you in the first place.
This is something that I don't know. I could be way off, but this is something I noticed that wasn't in that YouTube video, and it wasn't on Wikipedia too much, so I don't know if I'm making this up. What Shakespeare play do they reference a shit ton of times in this book?
I wasn't even sure if it was real, so I had to look it up to confirm. It's Timon of Athens.
Timon or Timon of Athens? And you're like, something what like the that. Fuck one is that, right?
Yeah. No one does that one.
But you know what's interesting about that one? That's one of the ones that people are certain Shakespeare had a co-writer with. And nobody knows who it was. There are theories of other poets or other playwrights of the time, and they're like, "I think it was this guy," you know, and going back to the 1800s. But that's one of the more obscure tragedies or problem plays of Shakespeare, depending on who you ask, or I guess histories maybe in there too, because it's Athens. And it has a co-author, but you can't, whose words are whose, it's not clear. And it's mentioned relentlessly. It's constant. Like, if this obscure Shakespeare play, it's kind of weird because at one point the guy's like teaching a class on Shakespeare. You would do the hits probably, you know?
No, yes, you have to do the deep cuts. That's they do at Stuyvesant.
Fuck them. But I think that was a big clue about the whole nature of the book, that I've not seen. Maybe because it's so fucking obvious to smart people. But to me, I felt like I discovered something really good there.
Yeah, that's definitely a deep cut. Like I had no fucking idea. I assumed, like, at some point I assumed, like, I knew there was stuff I was missing, like, references to, but I also knew that there's a lot of stuff that he's just pulling out of his ass because he's crazy. So I thought, like, that's maybe something, but I'm not going to invest any more time in looking things up because some of it's just made up.
I just figured that was one I could look up because, like,
yeah.
I mean, there were certain vocabulary words that my Kindle didn't have. And I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to assume that's a word, but then other ones I would look up on Google them or whatever. But I figured that was worth looking up because there are only fucking 37 Shakespeare plays or whatever there are. So let's see. What's the gist of that? Is there some parallel? And that stuck out to me right away. I thought that was kind of interesting. So put that in your paper, kid who's listening to us right now and has something has to write about this fucking book.
There was this part, of course, a note in reference to, it says, was said in English lit to be, and he's like, a lot of times in his notes he'll be like, I have this draft that no one else has, and the original version in this draft says this, and I'm going to talk about that. And of course, like, well, we don't know if this draft is real, because you're crazy. And also, in this note, he says he was at a concert with the head of the department, and he had a migraine, and he freaked out and left. And then he's like, everyone's up in my business. And apparently the business is, after the guy died, they sent out a mimeographed letter that said, several members of the Department of English are painfully concerned over the fate of a manuscript poem or parts of a manuscript poem left by the late John Shade. The manuscript fell into the hands of a person who not only is unqualified for the job of editing it, belonging as he does to another department, but is known to have a deranged mind.
Yeah.
It's like, look at all these motherfuckers saying I'm not good at this and that I'm crazy. I'll show them crazy.
Although at the time, because it was 1950s, deranged mind might have just meant might have just meant obviously gay.
That too, yeah. He's also deranged. Like, because in his, you know, retelling of the tale, John Shade left him this poem to edit and put his commentary on, but he didn't.
But he kind of had to, like, wrestle it away from the wife in the foreword. Like, she was not interested in giving it to him at first. He had to really cajole his, you know.
Well, at the end of the foreword, it says, the last line is, it is the commentator who has the last word. It's like, oh, it's mine now. So let's see. I'm just going to take this and run with it, fuckers.
Like Winston Churchill.
Yeah, history will be kind to me.
History will be kind to me, for I intend to write it. He said after he lost election and had nothing else to do. Another quote about how Kinbot or Kinbota, nobody knows how it's actually pronounced.
Kinbot.
Well,
Kinbot. I think it's
Kinbot or Kinbot because later there are plenty of clues that you're supposed to switch those syllables.
Yes. I think that's true. But anyway, so another quote that he says, this is very near the end where he's talking about, what am I going to do now that, like, my work is finished, my poet is dead, and you, and this is a hypothetical question he's asking himself, he's asking the reader, and you, what will you be doing with yourself, poor king, poor Kinbot, a gentle young voice may inquire. He calls himself king right there.
Oh, but they don't say, he could be a short king.
True.
We don't know how tall he is. It's true.
This is like, Grindr's been rough on me, dude. Nah, just go by the Republican convention. Did you see that, Nate? The owner of Grindr or the CEO, whoever, of Grindr was like, the RNC is our Super Bowl.
The app completely crashed. Yeah. There were so many people using it.
Nothing else to do there.
Yeah, I might as well turn gay. Just to see.
And there's so many closeted gay men in the Republican Party that it crashed.
So,
anyway. So, there's one other, at least one other mystery.
Oh. Just one?
Just one. Okay, just one that I'm going to bring up right now, which is, Who is Kinboat, and is that his real name?
And what? Now, who is his daddy?
Yeah.
What does he do?
Now, I would... Okay, so you've got this story about how, like, the king of Zembla, how he escaped, and he's, like, come to America, and it's hinted at that the king of Zembla, he's a literature expert, and all he really wanted to do was, besides fuck men, was the lecture on literature, and that's why he's come to America. And, oh, wait, the author is a professor at a obscure college that is definitely not Wellesley. And this whole thing seems to not be real.
Like Utana or something like that is the state he's in.
The state is Appalachia.
But he says it's in the forward. It says from
so
Utana.
It's not a real university.
And they're in
it's not a real state or university. But Nabokov himself was a professor at Wellesley and then at Cornell. So anyway, it's one of those two. Anyway, so. Who is Kinboat or Kinbota? Is that even a real person? Like, if the story he's telling that he's linking to himself, if that isn't true, because it sounds like it isn't true, mostly because Zembla's not a real place. That's a hint. But maybe it is in this world, you know, in this universe. If that's not true, maybe Kinboat himself isn't a real person, or more like maybe he's actually using a different name than his real name, and this is like another layer of the mystery. I would not have figured any of this stuff out myself, not at all.
Only if you had done the thing where it's like you read a footnote, and I'm sure none of us did this, where it's like, you know, the word is a fetus, and then he goes on like, you know, the king was a fetus once, but then he became a king or whatever, and he just like talks blah, 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 parentheses, see footnote to line 647. Unless you then followed each of those trails, which I never did. Did you guys do that?
Nope, not once.
Yeah, like, fuck it.
I figured it didn't
care.
Matter. So.
But it does, because he fucking, there are some jokes in there too.
Yeah. I'm sure, you know, having finished it and I'm knowing like the depth of each bit. Yeah, I know that if I had done that, it would have been something. But at the time of reading it, it's like, it's not going to make enough of a difference for me to jump around because then I'll just get lost even more. I'll be like, where was I? I don't know. There's no order to this.
Now, this is a book for study, not for just reading on a beach.
This is a choose your own adventure book, but you just have to guess what page you're supposed to go to.
No, you're supposed to read it like four times in a row. That's what you're supposed to do.
One of the like articles I said, like one of the old timey reviews was like, you can read it in order, you can read it as footnotes, or you can read it, you know, just the notes or just the poem. You can do it in any kind of order, and it either means something different or it doesn't really matter what order you read it in because the gist will be similar. But it's just like it's free form, certainly.
Yeah, that's why it's brilliant. Nate was saying something, but
I was going to get into. So, who is Kinboat? And apparently, one of the most important clues is actually in the index because,
of course,
Nabokov himself wrote an index, which seems like it's just a random index. But because Nabokov wrote it to be part of the mystery, Nabokov wrote it as if. Kinboat wrote it, which means it has his own opinions in the index. And once you realize, oh, that's what it is, there are some actually kind of funny things. Okay, Deza, Duchess of Pain, the Great Pain, and
my a
lovely
wrestler?
Pale...
That's like a WWF person. The Duchess of Pain.
My lovely, pale, melancholy queen. Calls her my queen, which technically if he was just a subject and not actually the king, she would still be my queen, but because he really doesn't like Sybil, what's her name's wife. So for one thing, there's an entry for John Shade, which that's the whole fucking book, and then there's an entry in the index for Kinboat, which is also the whole fucking book. Like, why would you bother to put that in the index? It's the entire thing. And then two lines above it, K sees Charles II and Kinboat. It's like, the same thing, but then when he gets to Shade, if I can find it, I think I highlighted it here. A different person, Sylvia O'Donnell, but then it says O'Donnell, comma Sylvia, nay, O'Connell.
Yeah, there's like a little
joke about Irish names. I think that's all it is. Shade, comma Sybil, S's wife, and then it says pass him. I don't know what that means in terms of indexes. That was like, it seems like that's like a special academic term that I really don't know. P-A-S-S-I-M. But yet, she's in the book a lot.
It means here and there.
But
Kinboat. It means it's like spread throughout. It's all over the place.
Okay, there we go. But instead of that actually makes sense. So with John Shade and Kinboat, he meticulously lists page after page after, or line after line after line after line after line that they're in. And for her, she just says, eh.
This bitch.
She's whatever. But yet there is one footnote, and I would not have found this myself. Definitely not even once.
Because it's like the last fucking page.
Botkin, the American scholar of Russian descent, Kingbot, maggot of extinct fly that once bred in mammoths and is not to have a distant other, blah, 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 Botkin, bot plop, bot tilly, bot bellied, Botkin or Bodkin, bot a Danish stiletto. It's kind of like, but the very first part, an American scholar of Russian descent, that the at least the video that I saw, they think that annoying little like person who's listed only once or twice, who's like talked about only once or twice, but has an extensive entry in the index, unlike anyone else, unlike most people, that's probably really Botkin is Kinboat.
So it is like, I gotta find his index, but doesn't it list his works and like the page numbers are backwards?
Yes, the page numbers are backwards
and
listings,
which is weird, right?
This, unlike every other one,
this sounds,
where it starts from the first one and then goes to the last
this
one.
This sounds like some black ops. I'm opening another can of this beer.
Wait, you're having another can?
I am having another can.
Oh my God, those are strong, man.
Suck a cock.
It'll help you understand the book better.
It's not going to help me not understand it. I'm already there. So there are a couple of clues that I found about the whole like swap syllables thing. Some, maybe I'm overreading. Like, this is the book where you're like, I don't know if it's possible to overread anything. You know, like where you take your first college English class, and then you're, every time you read a book, you're like, but why is it green? And like, just fucking accept it, dude. Like, sometimes it doesn't matter. I think everything matters in this book.
There's a whole thing about green in this in one of the notes.
Dude,
it's like when you talk about students writing shitty papers.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I'm good with everything except...
I hate when they say it's good.
I hate when they have read it like an idiot, looking in it for symbols. Example, the author uses the striking image green leaves because green is a symbol of happiness and frustration.
Well, there's a thing, another clue, a potential clue that I found. There's a footnote for Sherlock Holmes. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
And get he writes, it?
I have no, he says, a hawk-nosed, lanky, rather likable private detective.
Famous for being likable, yeah.
The main character in various stories by Conan Doyle. I have no means to ascertain at the present time which of these is referred to here, but suspect that our poet simply made up this case of the reversed footprints. I mean, come on, like, fuck, man. Fuck you. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But there's another thing. When he goes through like the family tree of the king, and there's a guy named Alfin the Vague. If you switch those syllables, you get final. And at the end, it's vague, and you don't know. But could be. Can't say it isn't. But there is a thing there, the quote about Botkin's name, where he goes, this is the note that Nate mentioned a little while ago, I think. Where's it again? Minds that died before arriving there, poor old man Swift, poor blank blank, poor Baudelaire, Baudelaire? How do you say that guy's name?
Baudelaire.
Baudelaire? Is that like a yodeling B-side?
Baudelaire? Baudelaire?
What does the dash for stand for? So in that video, Nate, they just drop that in there. The next line, he's like, what does that dash mean? What's that about? The fuck is that dash there for? He's like, I don't know why it's there. He's like, a dash. It's like he cut out a name that was two syllables that probably started with B. And it's a guy who's crazy. I guess we'll never know. Because it's Botkin. It's for Botkin or whatever the fuck his name is.
So, okay. Another back to the king was gay. Okay, so he saw... This is where he meets... Well, the woman who's going to be his wife, after putting off getting married for a long time. That's a hint right there. But anyway, he saw 19-year-old Deeza.
Deeza what?
Deeza who?
Deeza what's?
He saw 19-year-old Deeza for the first time on the festive night of July the 5th, 1947, at a masked ball at his uncle's palace. She had come in male dress as a Tyrolese boy, a little knock-kneed but brave and lovely. She came dressed as a boy, and then he married her.
Because of these nuts. Exactly. Where'd they meet? At a ball?
Which ball?
D's ball?
What? Those?
This one?
Dem balls. What?
My main question... after all this, is the end, the guy shoots him.
Greatest shoots John Shade.
Yeah, and according to Professor Kinboat, he threw himself in the way to try and block him, but it didn't work. So in the story he's thrusting into the notes, Gradus is there to assassinate the king who left. So when he arrives, he somehow comes upon thinking that John Shade is the king that fled, that's the part where I was very confused as to what was even going on anymore. Like, why did that guy think? I know this is all, you know, the ramblings of a madman, but I kind of lost the thread there. Like, did he mean to shoot Kinboat and he missed? And he's like, when I jumped in front of this guy, was he just like, I better go stand near this guy, maybe he'll hit him instead? Like, is it possible to even know? Because I fucking don't.
Well, okay, the video I watched had an interesting answer to that question. So, in the video, it says that, in the beginning, did you notice that Kinboat, he doesn't own his home. He's actually renting,
yeah,
right? But renting from who?
Goldsworth.
Goldsworth, the judge who like put people away, who, yeah, you know, like he has, yeah, to sentence criminals for a long time. He has to sentence guys to prison for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then he says, oh, just like I saw there was a photo album. And in the photo album next in the house, there was a picture of a man who looked much like Gradus, but he
Darkest,
had like three other names too. Yeah.
The very,
and
very
then
anagram.
There's a later part, there's a different part of the book where John Shade says, I seem to resemble four people. And he lists two famous people, one person in the town, which is actually like the lunch lady at the college, but then never says who the fourth person is. However, in another line somewhere else, it said that the lunch lady looks like the judge.
So
really,
okay,
Shade looks like the judge. So the theory, and I actually think this is the kind of book where there isn't just one answer. There's not just one correct interpretation. Like, you could go many ways with it. But according to this video, it's like, well, he's actually, the clues are that the guy is just a convict who came to kill the judge. And John Shade happens to look quite a bit like the judge. And that's really what happened. That he didn't aim at Kinboat and miss. Because how hard is it to hit someone at point-blank range? with a gun. Like, it's just not that hard. So instead, he actually shot Shade on purpose, but he shot Shade mistakenly, thinking he was actually the judge. Because they were at the door of his house.
Yeah. I mean, it's
because Kinbo had invited Shade over to, like, let's read the poem with a theme. What theme? And then he shot him. Because he had literally rung the doorbell. Like, the assassin had actually rung the doorbell. How many assassins do that?
So, Jimmy, any other questions you have? Because, you know, we know everything.
No, that was it. I got the rest of the book 100%. I was just confused about the end.
So, another thing that was mentioned in that video is that there is a island of Zemla, Nova Zemla or something like that, in the North Sea that was evacuated or cleared of people in the 50s for nuclear testing. And so all of the Zembla stuff might be allegory about that, about Stalin, or who came after Stalin? Was it Khrushchev? Kicking people out of that place. And there are clues for that too. It's not just like knowing geography. There's a part where they mention, oh, like in Zembla, when someone got hurt, like, was it that, like, when the glass factory exploded and nobody knew what was going on? It's like, oh, that's like a government cover-up story kind of thing.
Mm.
So they, you know, there's all that. So what's his name? Botkin. Kinboat.
It was a weather balloon.
Yeah. Kinboat might be a displaced Soviet guy and, like, adding to his insanity. Now, I also watched some other things and read some other things where people were like, maybe, like, you can go way conspiracy theorist on this. And it's like, maybe John Shade never existed and it's all Kinboat. Like, all right, fucking.
I mean, at that point, you can say maybe anything.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe this is a translation of a fart dialogue from two clowns. Like, you could really push some theories.
Maybe this is all just some story that, like, Nabokov made up.
Maybe it's like all fake, dude.
Maybe all fiction is fake.
This is what they want you to think. So, you know, there are some way out there theories. And that's why a PhD in literature is probably worthless. But they, I don't know. I mean, I got a lot of it. I watched those videos, the one me and Nate were talking about, and I got more. And I could see how you could keep squeezing the sponge for more information. But I'm done. I'm done squeezing.
Beside getting it or not getting it, did you like it?
So I found myself in the beginning really frustrated and being like, oh, this is... this is just like, wait, what is that? The one about Dublin. Fuck. What was that?
Oh, yeah. It felt like Ulysses, for sure.
Ulysses. Yeah, this is like just like Ulysses again, whereas, like, this is an impenetrable mess that I will never understand. Fuck you, Jimmy.
At least you knew that.
I didn't choose this one.
At least you knew that.
It's still your fault.
How is it my fault? And Dublin was a real place.
Yes. But then...
What's Zembla?
At least with this, I broke down and looked up, what is this about? And got some answers. They're like, okay, I can look for that. And it became more fun to, like, just look for those things, not just those exact quotes, because there were some of those I looked for. But it's like, oh, yeah, look for all the ways that Kinboat is gay and stuff like that. That made it kind of fun. But whereas the difference is with Ulysses, I, like, tried to read the guides about, like, what is this really going on here? And it was still nonsense. So I didn't get anything from it. Whereas this, I feel like I could kind of see some of those things. Now, I will definitely say I would never in a million years put in the kind of effort to both read this and then go into the, like, you know, red string conspiracy theory about what is really going on here. I read a book every week, and there's no way to do this in a week.
No,
the right way. Not even close.
This is
like a months long, like, expedition.
They still haven't figured it out 70 years later.
They don't even know. So one of the things that's mentioned in that video is they talk about Kinboat, right? Do you pronounce it Kinboat or is it Kinbota? Like, do you pronounce the E at the end? Nobody's figured that out. Because Nabokov
never said it out loud
and got recorded. So they're like, I don't know what he meant. I mean, it kind of doesn't matter, but it kind of does when you get to that level. when your whole room is covered in pages of this, you know, connected with strings and newspaper cutouts and ransom notes, then you need to figure that out. But Nabokov was a brilliant guy. He's a fascinating guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was apparently also a really, really good chess player, which I'm not, I'm a little skeptical of the idea that if you play chess, you're smart. I don't think that's how it works.
It's a skill you can practice.
It's not a one for one thing. Like if you play chess, you're smart, because there are plenty of people who are good at chess and terrible at everything else. But the guy was literally fluent in multiple languages. Was an expert chess player, was also a studied lepidopterist.
An expert lepidopterist. His first nine novels, because I was reading his Wikipedia page today, his first nine novels were in Russian. Because he's Russian. He didn't even live in an English-speaking country until his family lost everything in the Russian Revolution, and then he went to Cambridge, where he studied zoology.
Do I think and he then learned English
lived
at
in
home.
Berlin. He did learn English at home, but it's still not his main language.
He also
he's still one of
the Russian aristocracy. He also spoke fluent French.
Yes, but just the fact that he's one of the greatest writers in English, and it's not his first language. It's his third language.
He did his own translations.
Yeah, he did his own translation of Lolita.
Was Lolita written in Russian?
He wrote it in English, and then his own translation into Russian.
I know he also did his own translations of some of his Russian novels into English. That's why I ask. It's like when you find out, when you listen to the Paul McCartney solo albums, and you're like, he plays piano pretty well. And he doesn't even play piano. He plays bass. And you're like, but they're retarded people. And then you find out. No, Jim?
And he's the best drummer in the Beatles.
It's true. Ringo just ate the most glue.
My hands helps are me sticky stick to from the, beat. The glue. I can't put down my sticks. Help.
All the songs are just him trying to break
somebody.
Free.
That's a good idea for a song, Ringo.
Now, Nabokov is one of those people that you're like, that guy is on another level intellectually than most people, you know, could ever even.
Yeah.
I don't know what the opposite of the Dunning-Kruger effect is, or maybe it's just knowledge.
The Kruger-Dunning effect.
The crooning, yeah. The fucking shit. When you're like, I get it. I suck.
Oh, I know how much I don't know.
Oh, my
and
God.
And it's everything.
That guy is a wizard. He's a fucking wizard. He's one of those people when you read about him, you're like, that can't. Did his mom write this? Like, who wrote this biography? Of him? And he was always a good boy who made his bed. Who said that?
I believe it.
No, he's incredible. Was an incredible intellect. So all that is to say, I think where we're going with this was he would craft a crazy puzzle and hide and disguise and obfuscate and all these other things. And put these crazy words, there was a word I looked up, and I was like, that can't be a fucking word. Why would that word need to exist? It was like profumbity or something like that. Like, that's not a fucking, that's a, come on. Sometimes, though, when you're reading a pirated ebook, you get a typo,
it's
and you're like that's not a word.
That could be a typo.
Yeah, that's not real, right?
It's like what an amazing word that is.
And like it fused the words, the letters together. It's like, that should definitely be an H, not
exactly,
a,
yeah. But then I looked it up. It's like, no, it's like that word just means being shy. Why the fuck would he use that word?
Because it was there.
Oh, my God. He has like the Everest of thesauruses.
He is the Everest of thesauruses.
And he's not really a native English speaker. I mean, he kind of is because he learned it at home, but he didn't even live in an English speaking country until he was like middle aged.
So he moved, he moved to the States. And then in right around the time this book was came out, I said that like a person who's not doesn't speak English, though I do. He moved to Switzerland, where he spent the rest of his life. He died like, he was not young when he wrote this. He was in his 50s or maybe even 60s almost. And then I'm just remembering the whole thing like of the guy getting assassinated by accident, that may have also been autobiographical because that happened to his dad. His dad got shot because his dad was some like bureaucrat. I was kind of hoping Nate had read this and I wouldn't have to remember all the details. His dad.
I did read it, but I don't remember all the details. Now, okay. His father was a family of Russian aristocracy who lost everything in the Russian Revolution. But then his father, there was a section on that.
His father was assassinated. Yeah, his father, they were trying to kill somebody else and they killed his father.
Russian monarchists, and it lists their name, shot and killed Nabokov's father in Berlin as he was as he was shielding their target, Pavel Miliukov. No. Miliukov, why is that extra Y there? I don't understand. Anyway, but leader of the Constitutional Democratic Party in exile. So Nabokov's father was killed because he was in the way of the real target of the assassins. Meanwhile, this is monarchists killing the leader of the Democratic. The monarchists in exile were killing the leader of the Democratic Party in exile in 1922. They were never coming back to Russia. None of any of them. Because like the Soviets, the communists had completely taken over by then.
But just
and
in
they're
case.
Murdering each other in Berlin. Like, no, we're the real Russians in exile. Like, it is just completely fucking useless. And that's how his father dies. When Nabokov is 23, he was born in 1899. Yeah, so he's 23. So he's a very young man.
Yeah. So that's like another Easter egg in Pale Fire, another little thing where you're like, aha, I see what you did there. That's kind of the entire book. It's just ahas all the way down.
Get it?
Wait till you see the next one.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest. I didn't like it. I know that it is a incredibly interesting book, and I had a great time discussing it and learning things about it. But as a reading experience, just going in dry. I mean, terrible. I got the gimmick. Like, I understood, like, oh, this guy's crazy. I don't know where he's going with this. I didn't like understand it. Like, I didn't see the end coming. I didn't understand like switching. Like, oh, I'm the king, and he came for me. Okay, sure. So I got that part, like why it was happening, but I was really bored. I knew I was missing a lot of stuff because I knew there was probably something I could look up on every page, but just going in there like as a person off the street, like, oh, I like Lolita. I fucking love Lolita. I'll give this other one a shot. I heard it's interesting. I'll read it. And it's like, this is impenetrable. And yeah, if I put the time into it, which we have done now, I knew the fault was with me. I'm not saying it's a bad book. It is a very good book. I just didn't like reading it. I like talking about it, but I would never read this again.
I would actually read it again. This bears repeating, this book.
I'm sure it would be much better the second time.
You wait till the fourth time, bro. That's when it starts to click.
Well, part of the problem is, again, that we have to, you know, move on and do burn out fucking books. And this is not a burner. It's not.
This is a terrible choice.
You could spend a fucking year on this book and not get everything because they still haven't.
I am sure there are just this calendar year multiple PhD dissertations written about this book.
I'm sure there are books about this book that are twice as long as this book.
Oh, yeah, because they have to go through all the little tendrils. I mean, he was one of those, Nabokov is one of those incredibly well-read and just knowledgeable people that could just plop a word or a reference in there, and then you could spend 10 pages explaining that, you know, so.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I would, this, it hasn't turned me off from reading his other stuff. Like, I would read his other stuff. I mean, I don't know what his, like, third biggest hit is. But he's a great writer. It was well, I liked the writing as it was. I did not like this experience very much. It hurt me.
Nate, what did you think?
I mean, I definitely, okay, at the beginning, I was like, oh, fuck this. And then I was like, okay, I can find it interesting looking for what I'm supposed to know, what I know now that I've looked it up, what I'm supposed to be looking for, what I'm supposed to find. And I found that interesting, but still, I never would have. If I had just gone in dry, I would never have figured out a single thing. I would have gone to the end and be like, what the fuck is this? An index. I'm not reading that. And just,
I did read the index. I was like, I'm sure there is so much in here, but I'm just glad it's over.
I definitely skimmed parts of the book where it's like, I just don't care about this. I just, and yeah, no, you don't read this in a week. You just don't.
No.
We've said this about many books, but perhaps this, most of all, needs a Sherpa.
Like Everest, it needs a Sherpa.
Oh, yeah. But you should read it because it's there.
Just don't, you know, plow through it.
No, that's how I read it the first time. I was like, I read those words, and then I went on with my life.
The words entered me.
Yeah, that's it. And I knew as it was happening, I was like, I am not doing this right.
I am perceiving these words with my eyes.
I'm not even sure if I was perceiving them at a certain point. It's like my eyes are moving over them like a hovercraft. It's like, you wouldn't say the hovercraft understands the sea, but I was doing that.
Is there anyone you would recommend this to?
Your most pretentious book friend.
Whoever liked David Foster Wallace.
Oh, David Foster Wallace read this and he was like, tell me more about those footnotes.
These footnotes need more footnotes. I want footnotes about the footnotes, which there were some. I forgot my favorite footnote. I wrote it down.
In Infinite Jest, there are footnotes about footnotes at one point.
Where is it? Blah, blah, blah. Yes, here. My favorite footnote, actually, besides all the ones about, this is dumb. I'm not going to take waste my time with this. This one. Line 550. Debris. Just the word debris. I wish to say something about an earlier note to line 12. Conscience and scholarship have debated the question, and I now think that the two lines given in that note are distorted and tainted by wistful thinking. It is the only time in the course of the writing of these difficult comments that I have tarried, in my distress and disappointment, on the brink of falsification. I must ask the reader to ignore those two lines, which I am afraid do not even scan properly. I could strike them out before publication, but that would mean reworking the entire note, or at least considerable part of it, and I have no time for such stupidities.
I also highlighted that. I remember that note very well.
It's like, hey, ignore the thing I wrote like 300 pages ago. I'm not going to take it out. Just forget I did that.
So this is halfway through an undergraduate paper where you're like, oh, I definitely fucked up earlier. But because I'm writing on a typewriter, I'm not going to go back and like fix it all.
The thing is, taking out the notes for one line would not affect anything else.
I mean, that's in case it wasn't clear to you at this point that these things need to be read more carefully. I think that's probably the point of this.
I think this is one of those little clues.
Oh, it's, about I mean, yeah, it's
something else going on. Like, oh, that thing I said in that earlier note isn't actually what I mean anymore. That's one of those like Nabokov clues about what's actually going on. What that is, I have no idea. Though that line was
line
definitely 12
is
mentioned
the one
in that
where he's
video.
Like, I am the king.
Ah, you see.
No, I made that up. I have no idea what it was.
Oh, okay. But anyway, an important line.
It'll be right near the beginning of commentary, right? It's for line 12. That crystal land. Oh, perhaps an allusion to Zembla, my dear country. And then there's a whole, this is where it goes into the whole thing about Zembla and the king. It's the one that's like many pages long about Zembla.
And it's a very funny book. It is
funny.
But it's funny where there's
it's
like
funny
a price
like a
of
New Yorker cartoon.
Funny how? Like a clown? Like a But it's like funny for you need to be at a, it's like, you know, like at the bumper cars, like you need to be this tall to ride. Like you need to like get this much shit to see the funny part. Otherwise you're going to be sporking so hard. And that sounds really elitist and snobby, and I don't mean it to.
No, this book is elitist and snobby.
But yeah, like you need to be a really strong reader and understand all of the conventions of the novel that Nabokov is subverting. All of the things that he's been like, fuck that. Like, oh, the book is told here. I'm going to tell it in the footnotes. Like, oh, the character tells you a thing. No, what the character doesn't tell you is the story. It's like when The New Yorker, the magazine, masturbates, it's thinking about this book. Like, it's that level of snob. Like, that's really
like
what
Ouroboros
it is.
But it's sucking its own dick instead of eating its own tail.
Yes, exactly. It's sucking its own dick. I'm like, oh my God, it's so girthy. And it's just doing that infinitely. And then, you know, drawing political cartoons about Joe Biden or something. But it's... That's or like of a kid sitting on a couch. I'm working from home today. Like that's the New Yorker. Like, so what? But it's like that level of pretension, and I aspire to that. So I find it very. I like it. I like it a lot. I mean, I needed help. I could. I would have never gotten here on my own. Gotten anywhere on my own.
I'm not sure anyone could get anywhere on their own with this one.
People must have. I mean, the fucking book came out. Like, people.
Yeah, okay. English majors and, like, English PhDs, they can tackle this shit on their own. This is not for mere mortals.
It came out to very mixed reviews, also. A lot of people were like, this thing fucking sucks.
And they're not wrong either, because, like, if you don't have somebody telling you what's actually going on, yeah, it's just going to suck.
Yeah, it's
fucking
not for everyone.
Footnotes. What the fuck is this?
No, it definitely needs a guide, like a reader's guide. Like a couple things. Read it.
Well, you mean, are you saying it needs footnotes to the footnotes where it tells you what is actually going on?
Double annotated version.
It needs a prologue. I don't know.
A gloss to the gloss?
It needs a foreword to the foreword and an index for the index.
That's called the aft.
Footnotes for the foot. It's like a matryoshka.
Oh shit! No, what I think, you know, one
if
of the,
I understand
in the forward, there's a part where John Shade is like, you should read the footnotes first, or I forget what he says, but it's like
what Kinboat says.
Oh yeah, Kinboat.
You read
thank
the footnotes
you.
First.
You should read the
or was it
the poem and then the notes and then Botkin. Read the poem again or something like that is what he says. There should actually, you just need a couple of things in the front. They're like, you should be suspicious. Like, that's what it should say. Like,
note about the actual book. It needs a foreword. It needs a first foreword by somebody else.
It kind of does.
Okay, everybody.
Because the book is old, right? The book is 70 years, 65 years old or whatever it is. I don't know math. I don't know.
Like, yeah, 65.
It's old. Nate? Do you remember being this old? And it goes...
those were the days.
When Nate was like, thank God Johnson's not seeking the nomination. So then it goes, you know, it should be like, this is a book that is old. So don't just accept because it sounds flowery, that's correct. Because you think of that as old, right? Like when you read an old book... Oh,
that's just the way people wrote back
exactly,
then.
Exactly. And it's like, no. Be suspicious the whole time. Don't take anything at face value. At least that one warning would be very, very helpful reading the book. Now, to be fair, I don't think today in 2024, there are very many people who just pick up Pale Fire and they're like, huh, what could this be about? I hope it's about flames. Like, I'm sure it's like a pyromaniac kid, like, this book had almost no fire in it at all.
Is it one star, no fire?
You know, it's like, at this point, I think if you're picking, like, actually, when I was reading it, I was like, oh, I need a fucking physical book of this. Flipping back and forth was driving me mad on the Kindle. My library doesn't have this book. Nobody takes this out of the library at a local library, maybe at a college library, sure. This is already moved into the realm of college book snobs and, you know, New Yorker tote bag folk.
This is the kind of book you have when you have a book collection with a leather reading chair by a fireplace and a bubble pipe, because smoking's bad for you.
And a decanter filled with gluten-free, conflict-free, farm-to-table whiskey.
And on the decanter it says, I barely know her.
But it's...
Note
it's,
business idea.
It's a glass for Reformed Jews. I've been decantered. So
I think Reformed Jews still have a canter.
Don't recommend this to anybody except the snobbiest person you know.
That's what I was thinking. Like, if there's somebody you know who reads a lot of pretentious books, but that I mean literary fiction, and they're like, oh, yeah. Oh, that was so good. Oh, Midnight's Children. Oh, yeah. Oh, loved it. Okay. Have you read Pale Fire? Oh, you have to read Pale Fire. You have to. All right, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter, @drunkguysbc.
Or go to Facebook and Instagram @drunkguysbookclub.
And thanks again to our patrons for voting for this one this month and hurting our brains. But if you want to support the podcast, head over to patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub, where you can also vote for the next one.
And you can join us on Goodreads, where we can read together's goods. These nuts.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.